This week's Something Wild podcast is sponsored by Pelletieri Associates, an award-winning team of landscape architects celebrating over 30 years of land planning, fine gardening, masonry, poolscapes, and maintenance services throughout New England, and a proud supporter of NHPR.
I'm Dave Anderson from the Forest Society, and this is Something Wild. Chris Shadler is a wild canid biologist, which means she makes close study of our dog's wild cousins, specifically coyotes. Chris joins me in the studio now. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's dig in. What do we know about how and when the eastern coyotes first arrived in New Hampshire?
You know, the first evidence we have in the state is from a trapping incident in 1944 in Holderness. But we know that they were here before that.
How do you know that they were here before that?
Well, because I've talked to old guys. Mm-hmm. And the old guys in Coos County, and there are plenty of them, have described to me perfectly a dog that they have seen as a younger person roaming around in the woods.
But the eastern coyote is new to New Hampshire. It's not native to New Hampshire.
That's true.
How are they different from Western coyotes?
It is a matter of DNA, of course. Western coyotes have a little tiny bit of wolf genetic material. Our eastern coyotes are much more invigorated. On average, perhaps 30% of their DNA is wolf DNA.
How did wolf DNA get into Western coyotes to create this eastern coyote?
So that's not the way it happened. So Western coyotes shall always remain Western coyotes. It's when the Western coyote began to migrate east that it ran into a very attractive but very small wolf, a red wolf type in southern Ontario, and interbred with that animal. And since we know that red wolves will readily breed with coyotes, the union was productive and produced our eastern coyote.
And there was a niche to fill because we had already lost our eastern timber wolves, correct?
That's right.
So they basically arrived here, the dinner table was set, there was nobody occupying that niche, and thus we have coyotes arriving.
That's exactly right. And at the time that the coyotes arrived, there were bobcat, there were lynx, there were probably a spare mountain lion or two roaming around out there, but the particular niche that fit the coyote so well was unoccupied, and that was largely the result of wolves having been extirpated.
How are they doing nowadays?
They're doing beautifully, thank you.
How many coyotes in New Hampshire today?
Maybe 5,000, and that's only a guess. Nobody really knows because nobody is counting.
So coyotes are found all over the state of New Hampshire today. Cities, suburbs, rural areas.
Everywhere. A few years ago, a friend of mine was sitting in her car at a red light, and the streets were a little bit crowded. And so my friend looked over, saw all these people, saw that there was a dog in their midst, turned away, thought for a second, looked back, saw that the dog had no collar. The dog had very large ears. The people around this animal were largely unaware of the animal, it would have appeared to her. The light changed, the crowd crosses the street, and obviously this is a coyote right in the midst of these people, crossing the street on a green light, just like all ethical coyotes do. And, you know, and off it went. And she wheeled down the road and tried to follow it, but it darted down an alley and was gone.
And it's not just in New Hampshire cities. I mean, Chicago has surveyed, what, 3,000 coyotes?
3,000 coyotes,
and
right.
Coyotes have been spotted on the ice of Boston Harbor last winter. They've been spotted in Boston Common. And allegedly, there was a coyote in Central Park.
I'm sure there's a pack in Central Park.
So did they get into the city using the bridge or the tunnel? They took the A train?
Sure. I think probably the train,
okay,
because they're very smart and adaptable. And we think that more than a pack is living in Central Park because Central Park is enormous and has great habitat for coyotes.
So how come they're so successful, even in urban areas?
They have a strategy of being a generalist. So there are specialists in the world, like wolves, that require specific habitat, eat certain things, they're kind of picky, and they wind up on the endangered species list. Then there are characters like the coyote, generalists, they'll eat anything, live anywhere, and so they're far more adaptable. And What makes them so successful is their responsive reproduction.
Responsive reproduction. What does that mean?
So it means that when their environment or when their numbers are disrupted, when the stability of the pack is disturbed, they respond by producing larger litters and even perhaps more frequent litters.
And the pack is a stable unit. Not
yes.
all females breed?
Right, right.
How does that work?
Mom is a dictator, just like all of us moms would love to be. And she restricts the breeding on territory to herself and her mate. If any of her young females attempt to breed, she will reprimand them severely. Because if more than one female on territory breeds, there won't be enough food to support the pack.
So it's kind of a self-regulating population. And when you say mom, you mean the alpha female.
What we used to call the alpha female. So now they're called the breeding pair.
The breeding pair.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the unintended consequence of persecuting coyotes is to fragment or fracture a stable pack.
Right.
And now you've got multiple females breeding because that control is removed.
Yes, that's exactly right. Mm. People report that, gee, there was a trapper in the woods and he got 10 coyotes last year, and now there's more than there were last year. And they call me and ask me, what is going on with this? I recommend that they talk to the local trapper and ask him to not trap them.
Mm-hmm. So the elephant in the room really is that coyotes do not have the best public relations. In terms of the public perception of coyotes has been negative.
Yes, the public perception of coyotes is negative because state agencies allow 365-day-a-year hunting, trapping, and so it disrupts the stability of the pack. And the fact that these animals, which were once relegated to a very narrow range out west and are now found in Canada, throughout the lower 48, Central America, all the way down to South America, is proof of their resilience in the face of very heavy hunting.
But to be fair, people are afraid of them, not just as varmints, but the times that we hear about coyotes tend to be there's an attack on domestic pet.
Yes, it's interesting. If you look at the timing of those attacks, those attacks most likely occur during their denning period. And so they will defend their den, they will protect their young because this is their future. And rarely do we ever know where dens are. It's very difficult to find them. And they may den in a park. They may den right off a trail. And so somebody minding their own business may be confronted with what appears to be a very aggressive animal. And that animal is at that moment very aggressive because it's defending a den. The proper thing to do, report the coyote and to a conservation officer or to an animal control officer, and then put up signs around that area saying, possible coyote den. Please reroute your walk for the next month.
So with populations of coyotes increasing in southern New Hampshire, there's probably a likelihood there'll be increasing dens that are established in proximity to where people live and hike and walk. And you said it's, parks in southern New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm. It's possible that that will happen. But here's the thing. They are self-regulating. And so of every litter, 50 to 75% of the pups will die. And then the other part of self-regulation is that the female heat season only lasts 5 days. And so 2/3 of the adult females never breed, ever. And so one would suspect that with a rapidly reproducing critter, that there would be millions of coyotes within a couple of years.
Sure.
And without natural mortality, there would be. But these self-regulating factors help to stabilize the population, most likely at a lower level than it would be right now, had there not been hunting.
So what's the best thing New Hampshire residents can do to ensure a healthy relationship with our wild canines?
Educate them. Really educate them. Make them terrified of us.
Educate the coyotes.
Educate the coyotes. And we have that chance from the time they emerge from the den. They are out in the world, and they're naive, and they will wander up people's driveways and into people's backyards and try to play with people's dogs, kids, cats, whatever. People should haze them by chasing them, being loud, and making it uncomfortable for those coyotes to be anywhere near their backyard.
So this is a little off script, but when people hear coyotes howling, what does that tell us?
It tells us that there are coyotes out there. The reason that coyotes howl is to communicate with one another. They're locating one another. They are not conveying information about animals they just killed. Mm-hmm. That is a myth. They are not preparing for a hunt. That is a myth. Howling and hunting are not coincident with one another. If you made your living with your 4 feet and your jaws, you would not want to go screaming through the woods after your prey.
Right.
So communication within the pack is one reason they howl. Another reason they howl is to defend their territory against another pack. So some people have reported hearing a pack of coyotes howl responded by another pack of coyotes howl. And that's really exciting because you've got this territorial defense going on.
What's the nature of their aggression towards each other? Do they physically fight each other?
They don't want to fight each other. It's really productive, and we should learn from this. They sound bigger with all of the ululations that they make. One coyote can sound like three.
Absolutely.
Right. And so one pack is trying to convince the other pack of its strength and its might and its intelligence and its bravery, and the other pack is doing the same in order to avoid confrontation.
It's almost like bagpipes in warfare. Terrifying.
Yes. Yeah.
Psychological warfare.
Yeah,
there's many of us. So what is one thing that you would want every New Hampshire resident to know about coyotes?
I would want them to know that these animals are dogs. Many of us own dogs that we love and cherish and admire for their beauty and their strength and their speed and their affection and their playfulness. Coyotes are dogs. And so by relegating the coyote to the status of varmint really negates the entire being of this animal. And the way that we manage this animal so needs to be reviewed.
Well, thank you for coming into the Something Wild studio, Chris Shadler. Appreciate
that. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Something Wild is a joint production of the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests, New Hampshire Audubon, and NHPR.
I heard the thunder and lightning.
I say coyote. You say?
Coyote. But you say coyote.
Coyote.
So do I.
So do we interchange? I say coyote, you say coyote, I say coyote, you say coyote.
Yeah. It's a beautiful tomato-tomato thing.
Which is the right pronunciation for...
I think that out west, it is referred to as a coyote because that is a sort of an Americanization of the Mexican coyote, which is what the animal was called down there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those three syllables, coyote, 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 that's western, and we tend to call it coyote.
Cut down by the crew on the crash boat. Catch out from the mighty and high. Ain't no one left for the good to go. No truth in a world full of lies. I run for and give and fed it throws from and stumble around. Gather all the greed to go back to their holy ground. Wash your hands of all the blood, beg to borrow and stole.
Hey, this is Dave of the Forest Society, one of the hosts of Something Wild, a podcast you clearly know and love. Thanks so much for subscribing and for listening. I just wanted to make a quick recommendation. If you like our podcast, I think you'll love Outside In, a podcast about the natural world and how we use it. Host Sam Evans Brown has done stories about epic White Mountain Trail crews, how human hormones are derived from soybeans, how to navigate the ocean without a compass. And sometimes he just talks weird bugs, stinky trees, and other cool stuff, too. Look for NHPR's Outside In on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.